Hey everybody, this is Jeff Harmon with the Photo Taco Podcast, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with the one and only Sharky James. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 103. How does the Nikon D500 really perform? In this episode, we're giving away not one, but three great Think Tank photo bags. My assessment of how the Nikon D500 performs, Sony drops a 50 macro, a cool device to display your cameras, a dead bomber in Kentucky might keep killing, and U.S. drone regulations are in effect. All that and more in episode 103 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Jeff, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Utah-based photographer Jeff Harmon, host of the Improved Photography Network's podcast called Photo Taco, is an IT professional by day, and every chance he gets out to capture the beautiful world around him. We love our brothers over at Improved Photography, and Jeff was so kind as to have me on his show this past Saturday morning, just hours after shooting my first high school football game of the season. Now, thanks to Photo Mechanic, I was able to cull a ton of photos as I put the Nikon D500 through its paces. And despite Turtle Slow Lightroom slowing me down when it came time to edit those photos, I actually got some sleep before we dove deep into shooting not only football, but a number of other sports as well, and talking about the Nikon D500. At 1 hour and 42 minutes, I think it's their longest episode ever, so if sports photography interests you, or you just like hearing me talk for almost 2 hours straight, check out the August 30th, 2016 edition of Photo Taco called Sports Photography with Sharky James, and go deep with us. Get it? Go deep. Football reference. All right. It's going to be one of those shows. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 103 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you hitting that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode, as well as telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Could you use an awesome new bag for your camera gear? Well, if you hear this before September 6, 2016, you might want to hit the show notes for episode 103 at petapixel.com/podcast and enter our Think Tank photo camera bag giveaway. To celebrate breaking into the 100s here on the show, we're giving away not one, but three awesome bags by the amazing Think Tank Photo. You hear me talk about their gear all the time here because I've been using their stuff for a long, long time now. And as a photojournalist, it was essential gear. When I had my modular belt system and pouches with me, I knew I could get to the stuff I needed to quickly and get the shot. And that was awesome. Only Batman has a cooler belt, let me tell you. We're giving away three awesome bags, like I said. Bag number one is the Airport Security Version 2.0. That's right, the big boy. The company's largest carry-on camera bag. So big that if you have one, you can hold a 600mm f4 in there and still have room for a bunch of other stuff. So imagine what else it holds if you don't have that. That bag is just amazing, and everyone who owns it just loves it, and it's totally worth the $415 US that it is. So imagine if you win it. Bag number two is the Lily D'Antuto, a shoulder bag designed specifically for female professional photographers and can hold the fancy pro glass that you may own, along with a camera body and so much more. That beautiful bag, and you definitely have to check it out, is $300. Bag number three is the awesome MindShift Rotation 180 Degrees Horizon 34L. A camera bag geared toward the outdoor photographer with a belt pack that quickly rotates 180 degrees so you can get to your gear quickly and get the shot. That's a $260 bag, and like all of Think Tank Photo's gear, is amazingly well built. You hear me say it all the time here on the show. That's right. You just can't kill their stuff. You just can't. It's amazing. If you'd like to enter this giveaway, which takes like no time at all, by the way, hit the show notes before September 7th, 2016 over at petapixel.com/podcast, and we'll link you over to that. And if you're listening to this in the future, I'm sorry you didn't win, or maybe you did. Maybe you won it and you're listening. Thank you so much, but definitely subscribe to this show. And in the future, we're going to have other great giveaways that you don't want to miss. I mean, last year we gave away a Sony A7R Mark II. That was an expensive camera, and the guy that won that is loving it. I am so stoked that we are partnered with Think Tank Photo on this giveaway. And of course, when you're done entering, or even if you're not going to enter, have a look at the incredibly useful stuff they have over at their website at thinktankphoto.com. And thank you so much, Think Tank Photo, and you guys all for listening. As I said near the top of the show, this past Friday night, I actually got out and pushed some frames. I know, right? I need to do that more. I spend so much time in my home office and have been making more of an effort lately to shoot, so it's been feeling really good. When I was a photojournalist down in Arizona, I did over 1,500 assignments in a little over 5 years. I mean, that is crazy. It works out to shooting nearly every day. And that's not something that I do these days, you know? Now, not so much, not even close to that. But hey, I'm making an effort to get out and shoot more. It's a good thing. You know, I don't want to be that guy that just talks about photography. I want to actually push some frames out there, you know? And part of that push to shoot more is that awesome new Nikon D500 that I got, along with it being sports season, of course. I love shooting sports. Not a big sports fan, but I love shooting sports. And most of my AP awards are for shooting sports. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. And a lot of those are for rodeos. Go figure. When that body was announced, I was still loving my Sony a6000, but I knew from the specs of the D500 that it was going to be a special camera. And it is. I've owned the D4S, the D750, the D700, D7200, and countless other Nikons and Canons over the years. But you know what? There's just something really special about that D500. It reminds me a lot of my D700 in that it's a lot like its older brother. In the case of the D700, though, it had the same sensor as the D3. So basically, for $4,000 less than the flagship body, you got the same quality. You know, just not all the bells and whistles. You didn't get the grip and a lot of the other stuff that came with it. But both cameras produced the same image quality. There was no difference between the two of them. And that was amazing. And you notice that Nikon hasn't done that since, right? They were probably eating a lot of sales from D3s back then. The D500 is a bit different, though, in that it's APS-C crop. While its bigger brother, the D5, is full frame, but that's okay. I partially chose the D500 because that extra reach that an APS-C size sensor affords you. And at 10 frames a second and the very same autofocus system as the D5, you really just can't go wrong with the D500 and sports. If you absolutely need full frame and you really truly know why, rather than thinking you need it because everyone else says you need full frame, it's better for you, you're not a real photographer if you don't have it, etc., then, you know, go with the D750, save a lot of money, or plunk down $6,500 and get a D5, I guess. And if you do, use my Amazon link, of course. But if your main push is shooting sports as well as handling other amazing things, and you want a great body but you can only afford $2,000 US, then go with the D500 and you're not going to be missing out at all. The D500 can handle its business, let me tell you. I got shots with that camera that I would have missed with my awesome Sony a6000 or even the new a6300 because the D500 is not only built for doing so, it's actually up to my skill level and those Sony bodies just aren't. As I record this, they don't have a professional sports-minded body and that's just a fact. Everything is right where I need it to be on the D500. I can get to my settings nearly instantly. It just gets out of my way, lets me shoot. And you know what? With a body like the Sony's, you're just waiting on it constantly, trying to find what you need. And don't get me started on the horrible menu system. At $450 US, that A6000 is an amazing value, and most people, I think, would be happy with it. The A6300 also is a great value and an amazing camera, but when you need and want your gear to perform, the Nikon D500 is just going to smoke both of those every single darn time. I did something that I've never done at a football game, I think, ever, and I burned nearly 1,800 frames. That is craziness. You know, I was completely unleashed last Friday night. In comparison, my last season at the newspaper, I think I shot about 250 frames tops at a football game, and that included halftime. You know, I was all dialed in by that point. I was firing on all cylinders, and also, I didn't want to go through thousands of photos. I wanted to get some sleep that night, you know? I'm not just out of practice now, but the insanely high number of frames had to do with testing the heck out of the D500's autofocus modes, its high ISO, etc., to see what I can do with the darn thing. The high number of frames doesn't have to do with it being a year since I shot football. I mean, I could have shot 500, 1,000 or so. But I wanted to test the heck out of the D500's autofocus modes, its high ISO capabilities, etc., and see exactly what I could do with it. And I've got to say, I'm incredibly impressed with the D500, and I have absolutely no hesitation in recommending it. Not even a little bit. And that's with no qualifications. If you can afford the $2,000 to get this camera, if you've been thinking about getting it, just get it. You won't be disappointed. It's a truly remarkable camera. It's one you'll have for many years. And in 5 or even 10 years from now, if it's still working, you're going to be producing amazing images. It's not going to get darker outside. You know what I'm saying? You're going to be shooting with it, and you are going to be so darn happy. You know, with my old Nikon D700, I'd have to shoot night football at ISO 6400 at f2.8, and I didn't get ideal shutter speeds because, you know what, some of those fields were incredibly dark. But with the D500, light is no longer an issue. The field that I shot at was pretty bright, so I could actually get away with ISO 3200 and a pretty decent shutter speed. And with my awesome Sigma 120-300mm f2.8 Sport Series lens at f2.8, I was getting great images. But I often found myself shooting at ISO 6400 because I wanted more shutter speed, and I just didn't want to have to worry about it. Why take the chance of getting motion blur if you could shoot at 6400 and everything looks beautiful, right? Now this season, if I encounter a field that's particularly dark, I'm going to go to ISO 12,800 and likewise not even worry about it. Why? Because the D500 handles that unbelievably as well. You know, ISO 25,600 looked pretty darn good. And amazingly, ISO 51,200, the highest it can do in the normal range, the non-extended range, is very much usable as well. The noise, even at that level, 51,200 ISO, was unbelievably well controlled. In the past, you would shoot at your top ISO, and it was a digital snowstorm. It was crazy. But now, it's actually not too bad looking. And that's going to have a lot to do, not only with the sensor, but with the way that the image processor handles that. They've done a great job of handling noise. And I was frankly really surprised by that. You know, as a photojournalist, you could totally submit a shot at 51,200 from night football or whatever, and your editor wouldn't even bat an eye. They would be happy to get an image and just be like, wow, that was a dark field I sent you to, and you got some really great action out of it. But with the clean ISOs down at 6400, there's no need to do that. As I said in that rather long August 30th, 2016 episode of the Photo Taco podcast with Jeff Harmon, in another 5 or 10 years from now, even the cameras that you pick up at Costco or Walmart will be able to handle night football or indoor sports. I mean, it helps to have an f2.8 lens, of course, but you could totally make it work with the cheaper f4 versions. And you gotta think that these camera manufacturers are getting a little bit concerned about that. Because let's say in 10 years from now, that's pretty safe. In 10 years from now, you could shoot at ISO 12,800, no problem at all, with an F4 lens. Why would you buy the more expensive F2.8 version? Now, I know a lot of people are going to be like, okay, because I want to separate the background from my subject more. But when you're shooting sports, that's nice, but that's a luxury. If you could save yourself $1,000 or whatever and get an F4 lens instead, you're good to go. So those expensive F2.8 lenses, they've got to do something amazing with them in the future. I don't know, like 8 stops of vibration reduction, image stabilization, whatever, to get people to spend like $2,500 on them when you don't really need to anymore. So if you're a hobbyist or you've got a son on the football team or a daughter on the field hockey team, whatever, and you've been having trouble getting shots, something like the D500 is an amazing, amazing camera to have. I mean, I think it's an investment. I don't recommend anyone going into debt, of course, but if you can afford it and you want to get images of your kids while they're still playing sports and not have them be blurry, have a lot of noise, etc., you want to get really, really great images and there's no one to buy photos from to get those because, you know, that'd be a cheaper alternative, of course, right? The D500 would be an amazing, amazing camera to have, and I'm so happy that I got it. Now, I'm going to be talking more about the D500 as I continue to shoot it throughout the year. But man, I tell you, that is a special camera right there. Now, if you'd like to see a selection of my shots from the first game of the season, as well as the others that I post throughout the season and non-sports photos, head on over to my Facebook page at facebook.com/lensshark, where I'll be posting them along with my info about my approach in shooting a game, my settings, etc. I think you're going to pick up tidbits of information there, and it'll be of value to you. Next. Sony has dropped yet another lens on us, which further fleshes out their lens lineup with a really sweet 50mm f2.8 macro for full frame. As with other macro lenses, you can use this as a regular 50mm f2.8 lens, of course. But those who do macro work are going to be happy to hear that this lens lets you do a 1-to-1 magnification of your subject. It'll also let you manually focus as well as autofocus, has a focus range limiter, as well as a focus hold button on the side of the lens. With this 50-2.8, you can focus as closely as 6.3 inches, and it weighs in at just 8.4 ounces, has ED glass, reduced glare as well as ghosting, and is dust and moisture resistant. Listen, this is going to be a really nice lens, no doubt. You know, it's not a Zeiss, it's not a Sony G Master, but these days it's incredibly hard to find a bad lens, and this will certainly be no exception. If you're in the Sony E-mount system and wanting a 50 that'll also do macro, and don't care that you can't get that creamy bokeh at f1.8 because this only does 2.8, this lens would be a good choice for you. The Sony FE 50mm f2.8 macro will be available sometime here in September of 2016 for $500 US, and I suspect they're going to sell a good number of these. Personally, I'm just not big on shooting macro, and you know, if I had a choice, I think I'd rather get a fast 50 than a 50 that can shoot macro. I mean, if you can do f1.4, f1.8, that's going to serve you a lot better. This is going to be very specific, you know? This is going to be a lens that you could use every day, certainly, but for the rest of people, I think they would rather have an f1.8 50mm lens. But as I always say, buy the gear that makes the most sense to you. You know, if you can rent it, great. You might not like this lens, or you might love it and buy it. Borrow someone else's macro lens. You know, see if you even like macro photography. If you're bored and you haven't done macro, give that a shot. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are like, what should I shoot? You know, shoot something that you haven't shot before. If you can't think of something that you really enjoy shooting, then look at all the different kinds of photography you can do and sample. You might actually find something that really inspires you, and you never know. This lens might be something you want to consider. Next. If you have a bunch of cameras which you'd like to display on your wall because, hey, you know, that looks pretty darn cool, right? We're photographers. That would be kind of awesome. A super simple device designed to do just that called Hangy might just be what you're looking for. The 3D printed wall mounts are black in color, mount to the wall preferably in the studs via two screws, and have a standard tripod mount screw. With this product from Loudworks, cameras appear to float on your wall, and in my opinion, that provides a really cool look for those of us that are really, really into photography. Just make sure you're not bumping into them or your kid is taking their plastic bat to it. That might not be a good thing. Installing these seems pretty darn straightforward. You screw the mount into the wall, you place your cameras on the part that sticks out away from the wall, and then you use the tripod screw to help make sure it stays put. I mean, if you've got those screwed into the studs in the wall, that's not going anywhere. And if you have the tripod screw underneath screwed in, it's going to take a whole lot of turns of that for that camera to come loose. So it's probably staying right where it is. According to the company, quote, "That's it really. We made sure all the tolerances, depths, and clearances work so you don't have to," end quote. They're made of stainless steel, and as a result, so long as they're mounted into a stud, they say it's strong enough to hold a DSLR with a lens. It's been tested with a Canon 7D and a 17-55mm lens, which come in at 3.3 pounds, as well as others, and it seems to be good to go. It probably goes without saying that you don't want to put a big long lens on this and have them sticking out away from the wall. That's probably too much weight, and also probably greatly increases the chance that you're going to do some damage to them. Now, of course, you can easily unmount your camera by undoing that tripod screw underneath and then go shoot with it and then come back and mount it again so your wall has its camera back. Now, if you have a camera that's quite a bit smaller and lighter and you don't need the stainless steel model, there's plastic versions as well. They're a lot cheaper. And of course, you know, once you go with plastic, it's not exactly metal, so you're kind of taking a little bit of a risk there. So just know that. The metal Hangy mounts are available in 10 different looks so you can suit your needs, and they start at $21 a piece. The plastic versions come in 10 different looks and are just $4 each. For the link to these, hit the show notes for episode 103 at petapixel.com/podcast, or head over to shapeways.com and type in Hangy, H-A-N-G-I-E. Next. You know, there are some real evil people out there. And anyone who'd put someone else in harm's way earns a special place in hell as far as I'm concerned. According to the United States Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, also known as the ATF, not the ATFE, someone in Harlan County, Kentucky has rigged trail cameras with explosives. They say that a man named Mark Sawaf allegedly planted IEDs within the trail cameras, otherwise meant to photograph critters who happened by them. The ATF says that he set them up on, quote, paths in rural areas routinely accessed via the Dave Smith drainage area, end quote. And that was since this past March 2016. Some have apparently been rigged to explode when someone puts batteries inside, and others were booby-trapped in other ways as well. Sawaf was arrested after one of the devices blew off a hiker's finger, and according to the Daily Mail, he was fatally shot on August 11th of 2016 after he tried to grab an officer's gun while trying to escape. Unfortunately, he had yet to reveal where he placed all the bombs, so an unknown number of them are out there, just ready to ruin someone's life or end it. Now, with bombs apparently still out there, like I said, they don't know how many are out there. Kentucky State Police and the ATF are urging people not to touch any of those devices that they find in the woods or anything that looks suspicious and report its location to them immediately. You know, you think you go out to the woods and you could check out a trail camera. Obviously, someone else put there at someone else's property, but you think you could check it out and see what it's about. Maybe you've never seen one before, but doing so might end your life. So be careful out there. Next. Drones are exploding. Wait, I just pictured drones exploding. That was kind of wild. Let's imagine that for a second. Imagine they're flying and then crazy. I don't know why that amuses me, but it does for some reason. I love drones. You know, they're awesome. Anyhow, let's get on with it here. You know, it's not true, but it seems like everyone owns a drone these days. I don't, not yet at least. I can see myself doing it, but, you know, if I got one right now at this point, it would just be sitting around reminding me that I need to get out and fly it, just like my cameras remind me that I actually need to get out and shoot. Well, here in the United States, the FAA's new rules, which were announced back in June of 2016, are effective now. Small drones, that's those that are under 55 pounds, you know, the kind that you think of when you picture a drone, like DJI's Phantoms, etc., are subject to these rules here in the U.S., and here's what you need to know. If you're using your drone commercially, and that of course means you're doing things like shooting aerial shots for realtors and others who are actually paying you to do this, that's commercial. And I'm pretty sure that even if you're the client, i.e. you're not offering drone services, but you're using the drone in the operation of your business, such as shooting video of you from above for your YouTube channel, etc., that's probably commercial use. I don't know. Might want to look into that. It's a very specific use case there, so I don't know. And certainly, if you're claiming that $1,000 drone or whatever it costs you as a tax deduction, you're pretty much declaring that you're using it commercially. I mean, come on. I could be wrong, but right now those last 2 points are sounding reasonable. But anyhow, if you fly your drone commercially, you must first pass a test for a remote pilot certificate. After that, you can only fly as long as you can see the drone at all times. In other words, that means line of sight. So that means no flying over objects like buildings, mountains, etc., where you have to look at your smartphone, your tablet, your screen of whatever type to continue flying. That's not line of sight. You must maintain line of sight. And of course, most people are going to violate that because no one's around that's going to catch them doing it. But remember, if you're shooting video with this, you're documenting how your flight went. People can tell whether or not you follow the rules. So keep that in mind. And if you do get caught, no drone for you. Also, flying is only allowed during daylight hours, which, you know, you don't want to crash into trees and buildings, etc. So most people, for the most part, let's say, follow this rule anyhow. But if your drone has anti-collision lighting on board, you're able to fly during what's called civil twilight. That's the 30 minutes before official sunrise and the 30 minutes after official sunset. As far as conditions go, you must be able to have visibility up to 3 miles. You can't go higher than 400 feet, and you must keep your drone under 100 miles per hour. I mean, here's the thing. 100 miles an hour is incredibly fast, of course, right? Can you imagine going that fast in a car while shooting video? I mean, that's pretty darn challenging. And if you are going 100 miles an hour with that drone, how are you going to maintain line of sight with it? It's going to be gone in no time. When I talk to drone owners, it's that 400-foot limit that they really, really hate. I think that everyone with a drone thinks, you know what? I wonder how high this darn thing can go. remember, you're videotaping this if you are shooting video. And if you put it online, it's going to be kind of obvious that you're higher than 400 feet at some point. You know, flying at 400 feet is cool and all, but 1,000 feet sounds even better. But unfortunately, that's not allowed. These rules, which were known as Part 107, are available in full over at our show notes at petapixel.com/podcast. Look for episode 103 over there. And there's a complete process by which you can request a waiver of these rules, you know, on a specific case-by-case basis. So make sure you check that out as well. According to FAA Secretary Anthony Fox, he says, quote, "People are captivated by the limitless possibilities unmanned aircraft offer, and they are already creating business opportunities in this exciting new field. These new rules are our latest step toward transforming aviation and society with this technology in very profound ways." End quote. So follow the rules, use common sense, and for the most part, you're going to be good to go. Don't, and maybe drones just aren't for you. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 103 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show, which rarely happens. Everyone's shy, apparently. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And don't forget, if you want to hear me talk for nearly 2 hours about shooting sports and my whole thought process, etc., head on over to the Photo Taco Podcast. Look for the August 30th, 2016 edition. We had a lot of fun recording that episode, and I think you'll get a lot of tidbits of information out of there. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 104. Well, it's F8 and 250 to the second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
But you know what? There's just something really special. That's a good one. Aye, aye, aye. Now, of course, you can easily unmount your camera by undoing that tripod. If you're using your Joan. Please don't use Joan. She doesn't appreciate it. And it's not nice.